The State of Global Entrepreneurship, Why Results Are the Only Thing That Matters, and How Jeff Hoffman Became a Billionaire Entrepreneur Who Makes a Giant Difference.
Hello, my legendary friends. This is Legends and Losers, the show for people who like to eavesdrop on killer dialogues, brilliant rants, and crazy diversions, straight up with a business twist. Hosted by Christopher Lockhead, former three-time CMO and co-author of Play Bigger, who has one of the most strategic minds in marketing, but could also hide his own Easter eggs. And now, strap yourselves in. It's time for Legends and Losers.
All right, all right, all right. Hey, Matt, what did Joey Ramone say?
He said, hey, ho, let's go.
And welcome to Legends and Losers, my friends. And I'm stoked you're here. And I'm super stoked to have the man who is normally behind the microphone of Legends and Losers, our producer, Matt Johnson, with us today.
That's right. And I'm super excited to be doing the intro with you on this particular episode. I just was writing up the article for this, and it's not only is the episode phenomenal, but it's one of my personal favorite authors and the author of a book that's in my top five recommended of all time. I literally recommended this book no less than 2 hours ago on a coaching call.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember when I first told you that we were lucky enough to get Jeff booked. You were knocked over because of how important scale is to you.
Floored. Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge book. It's essentially, it's a movable, interchangeable blueprint for how you can build any business. And because like the two co-authors, you've got Jeff that's on the billionaire, like the big E entrepreneur side.
Yep.
And then you've got his co-author, David Finkel, who's on the small E entrepreneur. He coaches small and medium-sized businesses. This book literally works for everything. So there's no excuse for anyone and everyone to use the blueprint that's in the book, no matter what business they run.
I love it. And of course, I thought the book was awesome. And I don't know, what's Jeff's co-author's name again?
David Finkel.
David Finkel. I haven't met David, but obviously I've met Jeff. And I met him through Tim Rode and all our friends at One Life Fully Lived.
Yep.
We did a big event on the East Coast in Philadelphia in the spring this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away by him, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah, not surprising. I mean, this just going through the episode as I was on the back end, I personally took a whole page full of not just notes, but I mean, direct quotes. Jeff is one of those guys where when you listen to him, you realize that he speaks in an extremely condensed way, which a lot of extremely successful people do. But I don't mean in sound bites where they're empty sound bites. I mean where you can literally take a sentence out and you can pull something out that they say in passing that they don't think much about. And it would blow your mind. And somebody else could build an entire TED talk or a speech off of just that one sentence. And they've already moved on because they're saying the next super profound thing.
Yeah. And the thing I love about Jeff is he kind of sneaks up on you.
Really?
Yeah. When you meet him, he's a very humble guy. He's a very, got a big smile, big sparkly eyes. And you know, you just feel like you met like, a long lost friend. Like when I met him, I felt like I had known him for a long time already. And maybe because Timmy had told me some stuff, that was part of it. But a lot of it is him. He's just so fucking affable and easy to be with. Yeah. And he's fun and he's funny. And if you didn't know he was a really big billionaire ding dong, you wouldn't know he was a billionaire ding dong.
Yeah. Yeah, which is the reason why everyone should listen to this episode, because what he has to say is extremely important, but he's also one of those guys that can say it in a fun way. So that's actually enjoyable to listen to, and you get all the benefit without having to sort through horrible dry, like it's not dry, it's not, he's not talking in jargon, like this is not, he does not speak like someone that has spent, you know, 20 years teaching at, you know, Harvard Business School. It's exactly. This is real world stuff, which is why I love what he says about why results matter, because it really gets to the heart of not only the mission of the show, but also just it's a massive finger to everything that's going on in the world right now in terms of prejudice and racism and just insane people saying stupid things. Entrepreneurship to Jeff, and I think we all agree with this, and hopefully more and more of the people that listen to the show come to agree with us on this, that entrepreneurship really is the answer. That teaching that skill set and that tool set, which is what Jeff Hoffman calls it, a tool set, teaching that to people, not only does it give them the tools to solve their own problems in their own countries, where right where they're at in their own lives, but it gives them that, that tool set gives them the ability to change their world and gives us all something in common, right? The attitude that results are the only thing that matters eliminates prejudice, eliminates racism. Jeff has this great quote where basically says, look, when I hire somebody, I don't see any of that stuff. Ethnicity, gender, age, whatever, I see contribution. What do you contribute to the bottom line of results?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about this whole racism discussion and sexism discussion and isism discussion that I don't get is, you know, when I was an entrepreneur, when I was a CMO, I wanted to compete against the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got nothing to do with, you know, someone's gender or any of that, you know, any of that stuff, right? And so this sort of, you know, I think what we're trying to get to is a meritocracy where we can compete on our merit. And I want to compete against the best. And frankly, as a competitor, I want to crush the best in the world. I'm not happy unless I know I'm beating the shit out of the best of the world, you know, in business, of course.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Not like just generically walking around the hood or anything.
Yes, exactly.
Now, before we get to Jeff, we do have a brand new sponsor I want to tell you about. Yeah, it's an organization called Free Up Our Freeways Forever. And when you shorten that to an acronym, it shortens down to F-U-O-F-F. Yeah. Yeah. And I have a tremendous amount of affinity for this organization because they're really focused on, number one, no speed limits on the freeways.
Ooh, okay. They already have my vote. Go ahead.
Well, they're fucking called freeways. So make them free. Right?
Yes.
I mean, speed limits are really bullshit. I mean, this is a fucking free country and we should be able to drive however fuck fast we want to go.
That's right.
So that's the number one thing the F-U-O-F-F folks are demanding.
Okay.
The second demand goes like this. If you're in the left lane, the passing lane,
okay,
and there's a car behind you and you don't let them pass, 6 months in jail, $25,000 fine. That's the second demand of the Free Up Our Freeways Forever group.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I support that.
I do too. Although maybe, yeah, you know, maybe not quite as extreme. I mean, let's cut it down to like
No, why would we bring that down? We want to make a statement. See, I love Singapore. You know,
okay,
my dear friend Daryl lives there and spent a lot of time in Singapore over the years. And there's no crime in Singapore.
Okay.
You know why?
No. Please tell me.
Because they cane your ass.
I was going to ask if it had to do with caning. Oh,
yeah.
That's hilarious.
And so if you knew you were going to get caned for knocking over a liquor store, you would think way hard. Because 3 whacks of the cane can kill you. So,
okay.
Having talked to the folks at Free Up Our Freeways Forever, they actually want caning for people who clog the passing lane. But, you know, they're not stupid at F-U-O-F-F.
Okay.
They understand this is America. So 25 grand and 6 months in jail.
Right.
The other thing is, and I know we've touched on this multiple times, but why the fuck is it like 80% of the time it's a pre-I driver?
That I can tell you that is a unique California phenomenon. Now, if you go to the Midwest, you're just as likely to be like a Plymouth Reliant from like 1989.
But Plymouth Reliant.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Reaching back old school. Yeah.
Yeah. Do those Reliants, do they have that one, what do they call them? Not a bucket seat.
The one bench seat.
The one bench seat. Thank you.
In the back. Yes.
In the back, but not in the front.
I don't think it's in the front. No.
Because you know you're
could
getting
be wrong.
You're getting way old school when it's the one bench in the front.
Oh yeah,
my grandfather Jack had a Plymouth Duster. Do you remember those? Oh yeah, very steezy. A green one.
Okay.
Yeah, green 1972. I don't know exactly the year, but it would have been a 70 to 74 Duster.
Okay.
Yeah, and it had a one bench in the front.
Okay.
So you get 3 people in the front.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think it had seat belts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is back before they were, that was an innovation at that point, not a requirement.
Yeah. So does the Reliant have seatbelts?
The Reliance that I remember do, but all bets are off when you're talking about somebody that's going 50 miles an hour in the left lane on the interstate. Maybe they're rightfully slowing down because they don't have seatbelts. But yes, I'm all for those things. And of course, being in California, and we don't care what happens to anybody with traffic because we hate cars, nothing will be done about this.
Not if I have something to say about it. And so we want to thank our friends at Free Up Our Freeways for sponsoring Legends and Losers, and most importantly, for the mission from God they are on to up the bullshit clogging that happens in America in the left-hand lane. It's probably the most pressing problem facing America today.
I agree.
Assholes in the left-hand lane.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Now, back to Jeff.
Yes.
We love Jeff. And, you know, my experience of Jeff, you know, Jeff's a billionaire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I failed grade 10 math.
Okay.
But that's a lot of money.
Yes.
Yeah. How many millions is a billion? Do we know?
Did we figure that out the other day? Was it 1,000 million? I think it's 1,000 million.
1,000 million.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you know, Matthew, you can't live on that, but it's a nice start.
That's right. I mean, it's a good down payment on a house in California, right?
Yeah. And if the world's going to have billionaires, then I think we want Jeff to be one of them.
Yes. And we'd like people like Jeff to be most or all of them.
Yeah.
Yes. As opposed to what were we talking about the other day, the oil billionaires and the high style that they travel on Air Emirates.
Yes, they travel in style, I think. And, you know, Forbes puts out that list every year, the richest people in the world. And, like, there's surprisingly not that many Kuwaitis and Saudis on the list.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know.
Something a little fishy.
I don't know. Maybe they just got it all secretly buried away in barrels somewhere. And they don't, when the Forbes guys calls and say, hey, Sheikh de la Ding Dong, what's in your bank account, eh?
That's right.
He probably just says, go fuck yourself. Surprisingly, Sheikh de la Ding Dong is not on the list.
That's right.
But you know, the thing about Jeff that's amazing is, first of all, his commitment to making a difference and giving back.
Yeah.
And he shares with us a huge commitment to making a difference for entrepreneurship.
Okay.
Yeah. He travels all around the world. He speaks. He helps spark entrepreneurship with little incubators. And he set up this this initiative, I can't remember exactly how long ago, but not super long ago, mm-hmm. where he rented this super high-end ding-dong boat, like a ship, like a small carnival cruisy kind of a thing.
Sure.
And he rechristened it the Entrepreneur Ship.
Mm.
And he floated around to, if I remember, he told me the story, and it was a couple of scotches ago, so, you know, you'll forgive me, but as I remember the story, he kind of floats around the world over, it had to be at least 6 months. It might have been longer. Jeff's going to kill me.
Okay.
But anyway, he's floating around the world, and he has experts, you know, entrepreneur experts, business coaches, gurus, authors, et cetera.
Okay.
But with entrepreneurial backgrounds, mm-hmm. Going in and out of this boat, on and off this boat, as it floats around the world to all these various countries, and they lead these workshops,
mm-hmm.
and they just try to spark entrepreneurship around the world.
Yeah, it's incredible. I know that's something that it's like I said, it's part of the heart of the mission of this show. And we may not be buying a yacht or a small cruise ship anytime soon and going around and doing workshops, but it's very much the
same. You
don't
like the
mission.
Legends and Losers canoe? I mean, come on, as a Canadian, we're very proud of the canoe, eh?
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Yeah, all right. we're going to have to do that.
We're going to have to get a canoe
surfboard up here. We have to get the matching Legends and Losers canoe with matching Legends and Losers paddles, and we'll just go right down the river, and we'll teach entrepreneurship.
Oh, no, I was thinking we could paddle out in the Pacific Ocean.
The Pacific Ocean?
Yeah, okay. If Jeff's got the entrepreneurship, we could have the Legends and Losers canoe. Canoeing our way to legendary since 2017.
That's right. Oh my God, that's awesome. All right, you heard it here first. We're buying a canoe.
All right, why don't you tell our legendary friends about the most awesome Jeff Hoffman?
Yeah, so Jeff Hoffman is a successful entrepreneur, proven CEO, worldwide motivational speaker, published author, Hollywood film producer, and producer of a Grammy-winning jazz album. This is a Latin jazz album from a couple years ago.
Now, I don't hate to interrupt you, so I'm going
to.
So the guy's an entrepreneur, right?
Yes.
He's the co-founder of Priceline.com and all this great stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And what I love about Jeff, the other thing I love about him, other than his giant commitment to giving back and philanthropy, and of course the entrepreneurial, I think he's going to sponsor the Legends of the Losers canoe, actually.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But beyond that, and I think he and I talk about it a little bit in our dialogue, he's like a big kid.
Okay.
No, but like in the best way.
Right.
Right? Because if you and I had like an uncalculable amount of money, mm-hmm. you would do some fun stuff, right?
Right.
So he produces movies and jazz albums that win Grammys. And I hate to steal your thunder, but I'm going to anyway. You know, he's done these tours and shit with Justin Timberlake.
Right.
You see that? See, he just got announced as the Super Bowl act for this coming up Super Bowl.
Ooh. I'll look forward to that.
It's a big thing because it's the first time.
Oh, since?
Since the boob incident.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's fair to say if Justin Timberlake accidentally gets his shirt ripped off, we're not going to be offended.
Yeah. It's the question is, will he be wearing a nipple ring? You remember that? Oh, no, not a nipple ring. A nipple medallion.
Okay.
Do you remember,
no.
Janet, when we had the boob malfunction where her, you know, he tore her malfunction such that the boobie came out?
Okay.
You don't remember the big news about Janet's boobie?
There was a medallion on it?
Yes.
Oh, no. How did I miss that?
I don't know. Oh, I didn't. I think they called it we're going to have to Google this. I think it might have been a nipple medallion or a breast medallion or something. But she had this thing like around her boob. And you know what it looked like to me?
Okay.
You know those martial arts ninja guys? They have those like flying weapons and shit. Those like tiny... I don't know. I forget what they're called.
We call it like a shuriken, a ninja, like a throwing star?
Yeah, like those ninja stars.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It looked like that.
It sort of looks like that, but on her boob.
Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't know such boob jewelry existed.
I was not aware of this
either. I understood nipple piercing, but I didn't understand the like ninja medallion boob jewelry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, while you look up what Google has to say about what that's called, I'm going to finish with Jeff's bio. In addition to doing all of that, he has founded multiple startups and the CEO of both public and private companies, as well as a number of well-known companies. We mentioned Priceline.com, but others include Ubid.com, ColorJar, and more. He serves on the board of Global Entrepreneurship Week and the Unreasonable Group. He's a frequent keynote speaker. We mentioned the book Scale, how-to guide for growing your business. And in addition to that, he's doing workshops. I mean, he's an advisor to the White House, the State Department, the United Nations, the Economic Growth Initiatives and Entrepreneurship. He's been on CNN, Bloomberg, CNBC, ABC, what do you say, DOGFART, FBI, KFC.
I mean, KFC, IUD. Yeah. I mean, he's been on everything.
Yeah. So, but now, Jeff Hoffman is on Legends of the Losers.
So, Jeff, what have you been up to?
Continuing to travel the world and kind of test and prove the concept of, you want to make the world a better place, you unleash armies of entrepreneurs.
And, you know, when I met you and I heard you say things like that, I was like blown away because I thought, wow, that he believes all the same things I believe about entrepreneurship. So I guess I'll ask you, like, why is it you're so passionate that entrepreneurs are so important to our world?
Well, let me tell you, Chris, I just came back from two different trips, Greece. The first went to Greece, and we did something called Disrupt Greece, where, you know, Greece is a company with problems. And so to answer your question, governments in some cases don't do anything, but in many cases do their best, and they just can't get there. They're not efficient enough. They're not fast enough. They don't really understand the problems. Entrepreneurs are the people that live every day right in the middle of that problem and can't sleep until they fix that thing that's driving them nuts. They're efficient because they don't have money anyway. They're fast because they don't eat until they sell something. So by definition, they're the best force to do it. So in Disrupt Greece a couple weeks ago, we just asked entrepreneurs all over Greece. We said, can you just fix this country yourself? And then I went right from there to Vietnam, and we did the same thing. We did a sort of startup Vietnam event, and we said, design the future of your country and don't wait for governments, big companies, anybody else to do it. So that's why they're fast, they're efficient, they're hungry, they're passionate. Entrepreneurs just find a way to get stuff done.
And, you know, of course, I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm curious to ask you, you know, why you think we're at an all-time low in entrepreneurship in America, and what you think we should and could be doing about it.
Well, I think the should and could is good news, but let me address your first part, the all-time low. You know, there's a thing, the Startup Genome Report, right? And they report on cities and talent and entrepreneurship and attitudes. And for years, 20 years probably or whatever, Silicon Valley owned the number one spot. For the first time ever, we're not number one in talent in the U.S. anymore. Singapore, on that report, passed the U.S. Chicago and L.A. went down in entrepreneurship and talent. Shanghai, Beijing, and London went up. So your point is right. We're starting to lag behind here in our very own country. And we've got to – the why, that one's a little bit tougher for me. I mean, it's the – fundamentally, one of the things that drives you and I both nuts is people that complain about the way things are but do nothing more than complain. Right.
Makes me want to punch him in the face. I mean, I don't want to punch anybody in the face, but it's like, okay, well, fucking do something about it then.
Do something. Right. It drives me nuts. And in other places, people are stepping up and doing more, and we still got too many people talking or nose down in their device, separated from the real world sometimes. The good news, though, is I think that it's starting. I'm seeing this. I also, just when I got back to the States, you know, the new school year started. So I went and visited schools, middle schools and high schools, and talked to teachers and students in the last couple of weeks. And I think this next generation is getting better. These kids are saying, look, man, you're handing us off a world filled with problems. We'll fix it instead of just complaining. So I think you're seeing this millennial, whatever you want to call them. You know the way to piss off millennials? Call them millennials because they hate being lumped into any description. But I think this next generation is bringing some improvement because they're already irritated at the world we're handing them and saying, this is no good, man. We'll just fix it ourselves.
Well, you know, I just got to say to you, I know I've said it to you before, but it's been a little while since we talked, and I just love what you're doing. Your mission is my mission. I think it's one of the most important things we can do in America, frankly, around the world. Entrepreneurs, I believe, build our world. And the fact that you, in the position that you're in, have dedicated, you tell me, it feels like a giant part of your life now to sparking entrepreneurship and helping entrepreneurs. And of course, not just in America, all around the world. I just find you incredibly inspiring, Jeff. How did you come to that where you said, okay, I'm going to focus on this now?
Well, I have to tell you, and thank you very much. I have to tell you, but you know, the truth is they inspire me. What gets me up every morning, the energy I feed off is I meet these amazing entrepreneurs in places where you can't believe anybody even wants to get up in the morning. There's no hope, no resources, no support, and they, you know, plow ahead anyway. But I got to that point, I think, because since my startups were in the travel space and I traveled a lot, I started to see people, and I'm just there on a business trip, but, you know, you're driving along, you're driving through their city in this country or other countries, and you're seeing the way that everybody else is living. And, you know, I'm walking through and saying, honestly, feeling a little bit bad sometimes. We're doing really well, and I see these people that just aren't. And it's hard to just keep driving by. And then I started to notice this other connection that the most productive, the kind of people that were affecting change every day, literally changing the world, were these entrepreneurs I was meeting. So I made a commitment to myself, basically. I said, look, I am going to give back by turning around, going back someday, and trying to teach I'll teach all these people how to help themselves. I literally think that entrepreneurship, Chris, is not the goal, it's the tool set. I get people now, you probably have this too, they'll call me and say, hey, Jeff, I'm an entrepreneur. And I say, okay, what does that mean? And they say, well, I have an office, I have a business card, I have a logo and a website. I was like, dude, you got everything but an actual idea. Then I see...
hey, how about revenue or customers and shit like
right.
that?
Right? they think that entrepreneurship is the destination. And in truth, it's just a tool set, right? It's a set of skills you learn to be able to take things the way they are and change them in the way that you think they should be. So what I thought was, if I could, and we, but I started on my own, I said, if I could teach as many people as possible the skill set and tool set of entrepreneurship before I die, maybe they could get themselves out of their own bad situation. So I sort of stopped the CEO thing in 2012 and said, and I've been doing this for all the years since, said, I'm going to spend my time now giving back by trying to teach people how to help themselves. And the way to do that is to teach them the skill set of entrepreneurship.
Man, do I ever love it. As you well know, I've dedicated the back half of my life to the same thing. for I think the same reasons. And so, man, I just love what you're doing. Now, Jeff, you said something interesting as you sort of started that set of comments. Before I die, what is why would you start with before I die? Yep. I want to make a difference in entrepreneurship.
I tried to die a couple of weeks ago in Vietnam. I got food poisoning and wound up in a Vietnamese hospital.
What the hell did you eat?
That I still don't know. They called it fish sauce. What it actually was, who knows?
Happened to you?
I just literally, it was like The Exorcist. Everything was coming out of me, and I had to be taken to a hospital, which I try not to do when I'm in other countries. Not a fun experience, but it did make me stop and think. Anyway, laying there, you know, all dehydrated on an IV in a foreign hospital. A lot of these things, Chris, honestly, that make you think about how we spend our time. You know, I lost my father not even a year ago. My best friend drowned in a kind of a tragic accident in the Irish Sea. There are moments in your life where you stop and say, am I using my time wisely, right? Am I going to look back one day and have a list of things I didn't do? Or am I going to look back one day and say time well spent? So one of the sort of, I don't know, legacy things that was important to me was I said, I want to be able to look back one day and say, I helped people help themselves. I did something positive that impacted other people's lives. And the only thing I know how to do is teach the skill set of entrepreneurship. So that's why I said, and I'm going to be honest with you, and this happened at my best friend's funeral when I heard people talking about him. And I was like, no, guys, that's
so
not.
So you got sick at your best friend's funeral? So the two things are connected. But the aha happened at your best friend's funeral.
It sure did, because people were summarizing his life. And I was like, no, that wasn't Michael. You guys don't get it. And I started to think something, which I never thought before. I thought this, if today was my funeral, what would the summary be? What would people be standing there saying? And I started thinking people might be talking about businesses we've launched or deals we did or money we made. And I was like, holy crap, that is an epic fail. If that's it, then I didn't, you know, then that's not the life I planned. So I asked myself the second question. What would I want people to say if this was my funeral right now? And I wrote that list down, and I wanted to be able to say that I had made an impact on a lot of other people and a lot of other lives. And then I started realizing that I better get busy. So that's why I said, for whatever the rest of my time is here in this life, I want to spend as much of it as I can trying to teach people a skill set that will help them improve their lives.
I'm going to say it a lot, and I don't mean to be corny or too much of a fanboy, but I don't give a shit. I fucking love it. I love it. I love you. Now, Jeff,
you know the feeling is mutual from the second we met, buddy.
You know, isn't that funny? So Timmy had told me a lot about you, of course. And so, you know, when you have a dear friend in common, it develops a kinship ahead of even meeting.
Oh, no doubt. But people thought you and I were lifelong friends because the second we met, we were like brothers. And it's what you said. We have the same values and the same goals.
I think it was that hotel lobby, right, in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I walked in and you were sitting there. And I, of course, knew exactly who you were. And, yeah, it was exactly the same thing that happened to me with Tim Rode. It's that famous, for the love of God, Rode Illusions. Look at God's Richard Bach, that okay. Great Richard Bach quote where he said, rarely do people of the same family grow up under the same roof. And it was like, I know who you are, man. I recognize you.
You know, I walked away thinking, wait, why have we not met before today?
Yeah.
But good news is we fixed that.
We're here, right? We're here. Yeah. And it's such a thrill for me to meet you and to feel like you are a kindred spirit. I it's so cool. Now, I got to ask you as well, you know, this summer has been a very tough summer to turn on the television or to fire up your web browser and watch the news with the acts of racism in the United States and violence and murder and the horrible attacks we've seen in Europe and in Asia. It just seems like, you know, there have been plenty of times where you fire up the news and, at least for me, I want to scream and cry and sometimes do both. And the hatred in the United States and racism we saw this summer, and it's, you know, been very much on my mind. And so I was trolling through your Twitter feed, as I'm apt to do from time to time, Jeff, and I noticed recently you tweeted, quote, travel is the fatal enemy of prejudice.
Yes, and first of all, let me credit that quote, and that's my paraphrasing of it. It was Mark Twain that said that, and that's where I read it. And I read it as a child in a school book we had to read, and it never left my gut and my heart. And I understood what he was saying was, if we actually spent the time to get to know each other, we wouldn't hate each other. People hate things that they're afraid of or don't know or understand, which is ridiculous, right? How are you hating somebody you never even met? So part of the reason that I got involved in businesses that enabled me to travel was because I fundamentally believe that the more people I met in their home, in their environment, in their community, like in the last couple of years, I went to all the Arab Spring countries and sat in Muslim communities and listened to families.
And, but they hate us and they want to kill us and they hate our way of life.
There's a lot of
And, how is it even? I don't know about you, Jeff, but I turn my television on and I go, what the fuck? It's 2017 and we're talking about this? Are you guys out of your mind? Like, how? And I know it sounds naive or stupid of me, but I just look at it in very simple terms, right? Did you and I choose where we were born and to whom we were born? Right? We could have been born in Syria. We had no choice in that, right? It's like, why are we even still talking about this?
It is absolutely ridiculous. I completely agree. And so, that's why I kind of felt like the more everybody could travel, the much, much better our tolerance would be if people could start to understand. I got to tell you something. This was long ago, but I grew up in the Cold War, evil Russia, and Russians are the evil enemy that want to kill us all. And while it was still the Soviet Union during that propaganda war, I went to the Soviet Union to do business. And I remember one day after spending some time with some Russian friends, I looked at them, they looked at me, and I said, you're actually people, not monsters. You have kids and husbands and wives and dreams and happiness and failure. And we all just started laughing. And I said, I'm glad I spent time with you because it opened my eyes that we all want the same thing. Everybody's just trying to get along, love their family, raise their kids. We all want the same thing.
Isn't that just crazy, right? And it's funny, I'm still the naive little kid. I remember growing up in Montreal, Canada, and my mom telling me at a very young age that everybody's the same, or how tall or how skinny or how fat or what color we are or whatever it is. People have different attributes and qualities, but at the core, we are the same and we need to treat people the same. And I can remember I grew up at a time where the French and English were at each other in Quebec, and it was really kind of horrible, and French kids would throw rocks at us on the way to school, and it was nasty. And I can remember thinking, hey, didn't your mom tell you? And it's funny, when I saw, the KKK and the burning torches and all that, the first thing I thought, to get back to your tweet and Mark Twain, was what percentage of these racist, violent assholes have a passport?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Scary, and we got to fix it. Right? Because it's, you may have heard me say this before, but one of the most important things written on sort of my wall of beliefs is that drives me every day is, I wrote in big giant letters, these four words: there is no they. They don't fix stuff. They don't make it better. People watch that on TV and they say, man, they should do something. No, there is no they, man. It's you and I. You gotta, if you see something you can fix and want to make something better, you have to do it. So people gotta stop watching that and saying they should stop doing that. They should fix that. We got to find a way to come together.
I couldn't agree more, and God bless you for the work you do. Now, I gotta tell you how you appear to me. Can I tell you how I see you?
Sure.
You're like, remember Tom Hanks's character in Big?
Of course, I love that movie.
So you have that enthusiasm. You have the enthusiasm of a child. So you remind me of Tom Hanks's character in Big, but just a lot smarter and
uglier.
A lot richer.
Oh, you meant uglier.
No. I think you have the sexiest hairdo on planet Earth.
I got it directly from you. I literally took a picture of you to my barber and said, make me like that.
You did not.
That, by the way, is an ultimate compliment for me. I have a TEDx talk that's out there that's called The Power of Wonder. And what I talked about was,
I hope everybody watches it, listens to it.
Well, thank you. Because as soon as people lose that 5-year-old sense of awe of the world, of wonder, how do things work? Why do they work that way? Why is the sky blue? Why is everything? The sense that children have about wondering about everything. And by the way, being open to everything, right? When kids start, we did this experiment in a lot of countries where we said, watch this. We dropped a soccer ball, since that's the universal sport, on the street in many different countries. And you know what happens instantly? A soccer game appears out of nowhere. And you know what? The kids are every different color. And you know what else? They don't see anything wrong with that. We're just kids playing soccer. So it gets to a point later where somebody tells them you shouldn't play, I guess. Who tells them you shouldn't play with those other kids? But kids are fundamentally born with, you know, with the acceptance gene. And we just screw it up somewhere along the way. So that childlike enthusiasm and acceptance, I think that's one of the most important characteristics that you can have. So thank you very much for saying that.
I love it. No, and it just oozes out of you. And I remember the first time watching you on stage and then having the incredible, insane pleasure of being on stage with you. And it's like, who is this guy? He's like a 5-year-old in terms of your enthusiasm. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who are in I'll call it the age bracket you and I are in,
mm-hmm, right,
who are very far from that, right? Apathetic and jaded and grumpy and pissed off. And listen, I have my grumpy old man moments, believe me. But it just oozes out of you. And then the incredible thing is, I don't know how many other people think this, but when somebody is as enthusiastic as you are and as bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you know, there's this flip side and people say, well, you know, maybe he's not that smart because maybe if he really knew how shitty the world was, he wouldn't be anywhere near that happy. Right. So you get on stage and you start sharing yourself and it's like, okay, yeah, very impressive entrepreneur, of course. But he's like a big kid. And how smart can he be if he's a big kid? Maybe he just got hit by lightning, right? He's just this big kid who got really, really lucky or something. And then you start talking. And then for anybody who's read your book, Scale, holy shit. And you go, wait a minute, this guy is the 5-year-old and big, and he's got a gigantic IQ, and he's got this incredible track. And then like the whole, there's this moment when you're speaking in front of a group, Jeff, where the whole room kind of gets who you are. Like it kind of lands on them about, I don't know, in the first 10 minutes or so you're on, like, wow. And it goes from being just this jovial, fun, happy guy to like, ba-boom. The substance starts coming out of you. And that mix is incredibly unusual. Why is it you're that way, Jeff?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. I really, really appreciate that. It's you know, part of it is when it's go time, you go. That's the entrepreneurial DNA, right? Is having the discipline to bear down on something until it's finished. I tell people this all the time. They come to me and they say, you know, they have all these ideas. And I say, fine, get rid of all of them. Except one, the best one, and don't do anything else until that is finished. And I know it's a discipline problem, but one of the things that I have been blessed enough to be able to do is when it's go time, we get it done. When we've launched businesses or products or whatever the mission was, I've been able to tune every. People would come up to me, like way back when we were building the airline ticket printers. People would come up and say, hey, I want to tell you about this. And at that moment, I would say, unless this has something to do with printing airline tickets at a kiosk, talk to me next year. You've got to be able to, when it's time, to focus and finish something. And we were always able to do that. But then when you're done, you know, here's the crazy thing. There's not much more fun than winning, right? I was talking about this. I recently spent some time working on a baseball deal with Derek Jeter. And I was talking to Derek. I said, you know, the Yankee dugout was the really fun one to be in during your years. When you're winning the World Series, that's the dugout where people are laughing, messing up each other's hair, throwing stuff, joking. The dugout of the team that just keeps losing, you look in there, you say, boy, I'm glad I'm not there. So it's a work hard, play hard. When it's time to play, practice hard, focus, study, figure out what you got to do, then get it done. And when you're done, if you are the Jeter of your business, the guy that hits the walk-off home run in the World Series, guess what happens next? You're probably in a good mood. You're probably the guy laughing and enjoying life because you earned it, but you got to earn it first. So my focus was always, let's get something done. But when it's done and we can be proud of it, then let's enjoy it. And so, you know, you get the chance to, you earn the right to be somebody in a good mood because you paid your dues.
Well, and that's the other sort of interesting thing about you. You know, you hear stories about, let me say, your colleagues or maybe people who other entrepreneurs that you might be compared to or you're in the class of, because you're in a class unto yourselves, right? And so a lot of those folks come across, at least in the world, and even sometimes when you meet them, as these kind of Darth Vader-y characters, right? And it almost appears some of them cultivate that kind of a persona. They want to be these, you know, lords over everything, these massive kings and stuff. And you're the opposite of that. You're just this affable, fun, I would even argue sometimes, you know, playful, maybe a little goofy, but then all of a sudden, unexpectedly, like it's very clear, you know, the old eye of the tiger, like you are a mofo about results.
That is the only thing that matters, the results. In fact, as an entrepreneur, I always tell people, and that really brings us back a little bit to the conversation we were having earlier. When I have hired people, I never see race, ethnicity, gender, age, any of those things. I see one and only one thing, contribution. If you generate results, I don't care if you're tall, thin, black, white, male, female, Muslim, Christian, none of that matters. It matters, what is your contribution to whatever you're involved in life, to the human race ultimately, but what is your contribution to the business you're involved in? And people that generate results, that's the thing you judge. That's why I would always tell my people, I'm not counting vacation days and sick days, because if you're gone all the time, you'll have no results. If you're generating results, then you earn your day off. So yes, very, very results focused. And I've always been that way. But again, you might as well enjoy it along the way because life is short.
And so how do you have this jovial, enthusiastic spirit of a kid as opposed to, you know, these other folks in your, if I could call it league, who are known as these Darth Vaders and people would be terrified to meet them and why is it you didn't become a Darth Vader, Jeff?
You know, I think it's like you said, you know, the teachings of your mother about accepting everybody. I think that has a lot to do with it, the way that you were raised. But part of it also is, you know, there's two kinds of role models, the one we think of, and then there's people that serve as what you don't want to be when you grow up. They're right. A role model. They're just the negative kind. I have witnessed that behavior. I did an event with some peers, but I did an event that was with, I won't name any of them, like probably the top five names in Silicon Valley. And a couple of them said things like, we were an event where their whole goal was to inspire young entrepreneurs. And one of them turned and said, I don't want any of these people addressing me directly. They can write down their questions and security can bring them to me. I will read the, I said, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. I said, we flew all the way here to help these people. And he said, well, I don't want them talking to me directly. And I was stunned. This is one of the biggest names in Silicon Valley. And I looked at that. So when you, those moments remind you, make sure you never behave in that way. So unfortunately, I've seen enough bad role models to remind me what I don't want to be when I grow up.
You know, it's interesting, Jeff. We just had extreme big wave surfer turned eco-environmental athlete, or entrepreneur rather, Jeff Denham on Legends and Losers. And I was asking him about, you know, he in the business world hangs out with a lot of super big ding-dongs, and in the sports world, you know, he surfs with the greatest big wave surfers. He skis and snowboards with the greatest backcountry athletes, et cetera. He's sponsored by Patagonia. I mean, you can't be... He lives in the world that you live in. Sure. In business and sports. And so I was asking him a similar kind of, you know, we're having a very similar kind of dialogue. And he said to me, look, if an athlete's humility doesn't exceed their talent, I don't want to hang out with them.
Oh man, that is phenomenal. I'm going to have to borrow that and credit it to you guys, but I really.
Yeah. Jeff Denham is his name. Okay. Jeff. Yeah. That's You'd love this guy.
I tend to really pick people the same way. I literally have some friends now that are in sports. Each of them is actually a Hall of Famer in their sport, and they are the ones that you would never know that if you just met them and didn't know sports. You would just think they are nice, humble, caring people, and they're the ones. That includes Derek, by the way, the way that, you know, he's never been sort of the too big to his britches type of athlete, and you love to see people with that humility succeed.
You know, and I want to ask you about Derek in a sec. I had the incredible life thrill privilege of not just meeting Bill Walton, but presenting on the same stage with Bill Walton at an event recently in San Diego. Have you met him by chance, Jeff?
I have. One time I went to an event long ago with John Wooden, and Bill joined us for dinner as a surprise. So I was having dinner with John Wooden, and Bill wandered into the restaurant, pulled up a chair.
Oh,
he sat there for about 3 hours. So I got a chance to listen to him that night with John at a dinner table.
Oh, wow. I imagine you were pinching yourself.
Oh, I didn't speak because I was just soaking it all in.
And it's funny, Bill's talk was a lot about John. And he ended with a whole, you know, incredibly inspiring kind of summary of the key things he learned from John. But interestingly enough, on the humility front, you know, he walks into the room. We're doing kind of the speaker prep before the event's about to start, as you know well how those things go. And of course, there's no mistaking who he is. First of all, we all know who he is. And second of all, he's 12 feet tall, right? So he walks in and he comes over to me and he goes, "Hi, I'm Bill." And I said, "Oh, I know who you are. You don't need an introduction." And I said, "I'm Christopher." And he says, "Yeah." He says, "Well, then you know I'm Luke's dad."
I love that. Luke's dad.
And it was just like, you know, it was so great. And I was like, I instantly fell in love with him because you've met a lot more of these super achieved folks than I have. And, you know, it's funny, like with my heroes, a lot of them I don't want to meet. And I know that may sound crazy, but I don't want to be disappointed with them being an asshole.
You are so, so right. One year they asked me to be the chairman of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. And the worst part about it was hanging out with some of my heroes, because there were a few of them that I, you know, sports idolized. And when I spent time with them, there was only a couple. The rest were great. But there was a couple that I wish I'd never met and wish I'd never talked to, because it shattered my image of this person as a hero.
Yeah. And so, you know, some of my big ones, I really don't want to meet them. And then, you know, there, of course, have been many cases where I've met heroes and been blown away. Bill Walton being one of them. I mean, I didn't grow up with basketball at the center of my life because I was in Canada, but certainly know who the guy is and his reputation. He was on TV for so many years, and he's, of course, Hall of Famer and all that stuff. And so, you know, even though I didn't grow up worshiping him because I wasn't a basketball, super fan in Canada, but I still, of course, knew who he was. And there's that moment when you meet a person like that where you think, "Oh, dear Lord, please." Right. And then when they turn out to be everything and more you could possibly imagine, it's really
pretty amazing. Just a quick Canada sports story. I was working on something many years ago on an internet company, but I was working on it with Wayne Gretzky. And you talk about humble. He would, first of all, he's so low key that a lot of times when it was time to go, I'd have to say, "Where's Wayne?" And he'd be standing right behind me, because he doesn't command the attention. He doesn't demand it. He was so low key. And there were times that he would just introduce himself. He would just, you know, say that he's Wayne and fail to mention that he played. If they didn't recognize him or know he was a hockey fan, he was okay with that, which I thought was so cool. He wouldn't say, "Do you not know who I am?" or "I played hockey" or everything. He would just say, "Hi, I'm Wayne." And then he would just stand there. And I'd have to lean over and whisper, "He plays hockey," because some of the people didn't know who he was. I loved that. That guy was one of those humble heroes that was sweet to everybody in the time I was working with him, but just didn't need to be fawned over or made the center of attention. Those are the kind of people you like to win.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Did you get to do much business with them? Is there more to the story, Jeff?
The business failed. I'll tell you what it was very quickly.
Was it MVP.com?
Yes, it was. I worked with
I remember that.
Jordan and Elway at the time when they were trying to launch MVP.com. The business model never made sense. And neither of them were vested time-wise, you know, intellectually, I mean, mental capacity. They put money in, but they didn't really follow the rules it takes to succeed as an internet company. They asked me for help. I spent time with the three of them, and they didn't really implement those things, so the business failed. But the benefit was spending time with, you know, three of my sports heroes, but Wayne was amazing.
Well, and I remember back then, I don't know if you recall, I was the founding CMO of an internet services business called Cyent. And at Cyent, we built the back end of MVP.com.
Oh, I did not even know. That's really funny. What a small world.
Yeah,
that explains why you're one of the few people that actually knows what that company was.
No, and I can remember being very excited about it at the time. If I'm not mistaken, were they funded by Benchmark? Am I remembering that right?
That was one of the investors. They had a few, and they put some money in of their own. But that was in the craze where everybody thought as long as it had .com on it, it was going to work, and that was just plain silliness.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you.
It's actually a business formula. It turns out.
Well, they sort of lose money forever and make it up on volume, you mean? That is
I love that one. I like that quote.
Yeah, it's always a fun one. But, you know, just to tell you and I had nowhere near the experience that you did with Wayne, but my tiny little experience with him, I was in a store in Los Angeles years and years ago during the .com era. So it would have been, I don't know if after MVP, but sort of, if not after, sort of, you know, right in that time frame. And I was there with my ex-wife. And you know, I've met a whole bunch of these people, nowhere near how you have, but you know, I'm not starstruck. I don't give a shit about
Right.
It's not my thing. I don't know who most celebrities are, but anyway, my wife taps me on the shoulder and she says, Wayne Gretzky's standing behind you. And of course, as a kid growing up in Canada, I turn around and Jeff, there have been very few times in my life where I can't talk.
I love it.
And I went to extend my hand. I looked at him straight in the eye like I normally do. And I just went, holy fuck, I can't talk. And so I introduced myself. Anyway, while his wife was shopping and my wife was shopping, he and I sat there with one of his buddies in sort of the husband chairs, just bullshitting about life and hockey. And I had that kind of experience you described. And there's no way you ever would have known this was Wayne freaking Gretzky.
Yep. He is so low key. That is so, that is really cool. And that is really, really amazing. He's like that. We used to do the, you know, I have the entertainment company in the music biz. And years ago, we were doing stuff in the touring business with people like Britney Spears and NSYNC. And the NSYNC guys, sometimes I would travel with them on the road. And every little girl, they would come backstage. They would practice. Sometimes it was friends asking us, will you take my daughter to meet them or whatever? So they would practice what they were going to say to Justin Timberlake for 2 weeks in the mirror. Then they'd get there and they'd do what you did. And they would never speak. And what I got a kick out of was a backstage one night, I think it was Pittsburgh. And the NSYNC guys were kind of laughing about the girls that, you know, practice for weeks, then get backstage and can't speak. And then Mario Lemieux came backstage. One of the NSYNC guys, Chris Kirkpatrick, is from Pittsburgh and was a Penguins fan. He turned into the little girl who couldn't utter a single word when his hockey hero walked in. So I guess sometimes all of us have people that we look up to, and it's just different when you get, sometimes, like you said, sometimes good and sometimes bad when you actually meet them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Lemieux grew up in, I sort of bounced around a bunch in Montreal as a kid, but one of the working class neighborhoods called Verdun that I grew up in is where Lemieux is from, or at least lived for a while. And so you can imagine, even though, of course, he didn't play for the Canadians, you can imagine what kind of hero he is
in Montreal.
And really throughout the hockey world. Mario Lemieux, something's wrong with you, right?
I think he had a teenage daughter who wanted to meet NSYNC.
And oh, isn't that great?
Them, right, because they were stuttering over meeting him. But
so this is a fun thread because you're a guy who you know, had your success obviously in the technology world as an entrepreneur. And, there's a shit ton I would love to get to on that with you. And but to get back to you being a lot like Tom Hanks and Big, you're like, hey, I love sports, I love music, I love I love movies and entertainment. And you just decided to go out in the world and start companies and get to know some of these people. And it seems like, you know, you made your real money as a technology entrepreneur. And then you've decided to play in these other worlds that just seem like it's, I'm sure you have a business mind for it, of course, but you're also playing and you get to meet all these amazing athletes, whether it's Jeter or LeBron, and you know, all these guys that are your homeboys now. And I saw recently on your Twitter feed you hanging out with Donnie and Marie. And so, actually, tell me about like this decision to go play with all of these artists and stuff and athletes.
I got flack for that one because the week before I was with Nelly, so friends were kind of comment. I saw the comments out there. People are saying, how you go from Nelly to Donnie Marie, we don't know. They're different audiences. But
fuck them. You know, what I love about you is you go play with everybody. You'll go play with the Sri Lankan kid who wants to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, you go hang out with LeBron and everybody in between. Like, that. How fucking – so anyway, when did all that start? And tell me about that.
It started because I just love being around creative people, right? And so, you know, and high-energy people and positive people. And hardworking people. And it turns out you find those are more identifiable. They're everywhere in business. They're everywhere in life. But we identify them even more so in sports and entertainment, right? Because visibly to be a LeBron, just use that example, to come to Cleveland, one of the worst teams in the league, and say, I'm going to take them to a championship. That ain't, words don't get championships. Blood, sweat, and tears get championships. Teamwork get championships, right? Dedication, focus. And in the end, like you and I said, results. You can be as passionate and determined as winning as you want, but if you don't actually go out there and outscore the other guys and get it done and get rebounds and get steals, It doesn't matter. So the model sports winds up being kind of a little microcosm of life. And in a way, entertainment does for the business world, because a song or a movie is a startup, right? It's an idea, it's a vision. Then you've got to get domain experts, you know, in my business and in your business in tech, we get programmers, they get drummers and guitarists, right? But it's the same thing. You hire skilled talent to create the product. Somebody identifies the market, prepares the product. Someone markets, distributes it. The market has to like your product. It's no different. So I was thinking, I love being around creative people. And I'm going to be honest, Chris, I love being around winners, right? People that just find a way to get it done and stop complaining about it. So those two things being said, I said, well, you know what? If I created businesses in that space, I would get to spend some of my day around people that I absolutely love being around. And so that was the drive, was to create an opportunity for me to be around people I look up to. But I want to say this, the reason I was able to do it, and I think this is sort of what I try to teach, you know, the young kid in Sri Lanka or wherever I am, is that in the end, the key to doing anything you want, the key to having the life you dream of, is being an effective problem solver. If you can solve a problem in the world, then you become valuable to the world. So, you know, my ability to travel way before I got involved in Priceline or anything was when we created those the kiosks that people check in at airports now. And suddenly I'm getting calls to go meet with airlines and airports all over the world. So I'm getting to travel, which is my dream, and I'm getting paid for it. Because I solved a problem that people really had, it enabled me to live a life I wanted in two ways. I got to see the world and I got paid for it. So that is the same approach when I went to, and it's the same sort of focus. Here was what I said. I would love to be around people like those people, whether it's a LeBron or Donnie Marie or Nelly or whatever. And I said, the only way that's going to happen is if I become valuable to them in some way that they want me around. And the only way I'm going to do that is by solving a problem in their industry that needs solving. So every time I've started a company, I said, where's my niche? Where's a problem I can solve that those people in the industry you want to be around need solved? If you start a company, product or service that solves a problem, you become valuable to those people and suddenly they're calling you. I literally have remembered some moments in my life where people that were my heroes for whatever reason were calling me, and I said, this is like an unreal moment. Why are you calling me? I'm the fan and you're the star. And they said, because I need help with something, and people told me you could get it done.
So this may sound like a corny question, but what's it like then to be friends with Derek Jeter and LeBron James and Donnie and Marie?
it's reaffirming. First of all, like I said, I just like being around positive people and winners. I like the energy, the attitude, the commitment. You know, if you think about it, when you talk about athletes and they say, you know, I got to go to practice. And what you'd say is, wait, you're the best football player on the planet Earth. What do you need practice for? But you realize that's how they got there. I'm going to tell you a really quick Michael Jordan story. Back in those MVP days, I had been watching a game where it was the end of Michael's career. He was already Michael Jordan. He already won all the titles, all the MVPs, and all the rings. It was his last season. They were up. The playoffs were already set. The game was meaningless. They were up by like 21 in the fourth quarter. So he was already Michael Jordan in a meaningless moment. Scottie Pippen or whoever it was throws the ball to Jordan, overthrows him. The ball is clearly going out of bounds. All the other players on the court turn and start running the other way. Jordan, I watch this. I'm just sitting at home watching. I see him look at the ball, look at the out of bounds line, look at what's out of bounds, which turn out to be the press tables, and without a thought, floors it. He sprints to the end, puts his foot inside the line, dives, goes horizontal, grabs the ball, flips it to his teammate, and then crashes into the laptops and the press table. I said, can I ask you something? Jordan said, what? And I said, you're Michael Jordan. Why on earth would you do that? I don't understand. He said, you're right. You don't understand. And then he said something that was literally life-changing for me. He said, I'm Michael Jordan because I do that. He said, because every loose ball of my career, I chased it like it was the game-winning shot for the NBA Finals. He said, it's because I chase every loose ball that I became Michael Jordan, not the other way around. I went home. I couldn't speak for a little bit, thinking that people with that attitude that chase every – whatever. What are the loose balls in your life? Is it a business deal? Is it a proposal? Is it a customer calling you when you're tired and you don't want to talk to her and she's always complaining? Whatever it is, every loose ball you let roll out of bounds is one step farther away you are from greatness. So people that have that attitude are people I like being around. That's why I like being around people like that, because I learn so much from the way they attack life. And even if their thing is sports or entertainment, it doesn't matter. It's their attitude about how they approach their goals in life that I like being around.
I love it. And are you going to write a book about all the things that you've learned from all these legendary people, Jeff?
Well, you know, the book that I want to write, well, yeah, but the book, I'm going to change that from legendary to inspirational. I'm going to tell you why. There are those kids in Sri Lanka. There are people I've met in the, around the world that, you know, somebody asked me one day on a news interview. They said, who are your heroes? And I know what she thought I was going to say, Steve Jobs or Richard Branson or something. I said, it's the person you've never heard of. It's the young girl in South Africa who lives in a village where she gets literally threats. This is a real person. Death threats because she wants to be a CEO. She gets ridiculed because she started a company. And that girl has no support, no hope, no help. And she gets up every day and does it again anyway. So, yeah, I would love to write a book about the heroes I've met, whether they're at the top of their game or whether they're somebody no one's ever heard of yet, but they're impacting lives.
Fantastic. The other thing that strikes me in this conversation, do you by chance know former 49er turned venture capitalist Brent Jones?
No, I've talked to Steve Young before because he's also in that VC space. And I know of Brent, but I don't know Brent.
So Steve and Brent were best friends and roommates for a lot of those years, those Super Bowl winning years. Brent was on three of the three Super Bowl winning teams. Anyway, as you well know, there are very few Super Bowl champion athletes who turn into legendary VCs.
Oh,
anyway, you would love Brent Jones. I think he's everything that's good about pretty much everything. And so next time you're planning to be in the Bay Area, let me know, and I would love to introduce you to Brent because the two of you would be absolute magic together.
I would absolutely love to meet him. That would be fantastic.
So let's maybe dive into you. You were recently trying to get some stuff done with Derek Jeter. Do you want to talk about – tell me a little bit about what was up with Derek?
Yeah, so we've been working for a while. There's no deal done yet, but we've been working for a while on trying to buy the Miami Marlins. And we put a team together, some associates of his, some friends of mine, to try to do that. Sports, because I love sports, owning a sports team has always been not a dream, not something I'm dying to do, but it's always, and I have some friends that own sports teams, but it's always been an interest. So when Derek and I first started talking about it, it's what he really wants to do.
Why is he so driven to be an owner?
This is something, Chris, that'll blow you away. I wouldn't have known it until Derek told me that. There has never been an African-American, a black owner of a baseball team, and there's never been a former player who owned a baseball team. Derek would be the first African-American and former player to ever own a team. Obviously, I checked that with baseball and the commissioner when we talked to them, but that's amazing. So,
those two things are true? I had no idea about that.
Absolutely. So part of it is it's aspirational and inspirational for him to get there, to inspire a lot of other people. And second, he just wants to have an impact on the game and the way the game interacts with fans and the way the game inspires children. Those things matter to him, which I think is really cool.
And, and I don't want to ask anything uncomfortable, but it sounds like there's still more work to do to see if you can make that dream happen with the Marlins.
Yeah, there's no deal done yet. It's big and it's complicated, so it's all still in the works.
Still, and how did you get involved so much with baseball?
I love all sports pretty much, and I'm around them a lot. I think probably one of my personal fortes, there's a massive list of things I suck at. But branding and marketing is one that I'm good at. So MLB had
really
MLB had come to me years ago. That's why I wound up chairing the All-Star game and said, oh, we want to work on the brand of baseball and expand it to more people and market it to more people in a different way. And that's sort of how I got involved in the business side. But I just, like I said, I like sports because it's a microcosm of life. So I'm pretty equal on all sports. For example, we're doing another fund, like you mentioned, Brent and Steve, that we'll be announcing soon, that I'm doing with former, well, soon-to-be Hall of Famer Ray Lewis, who played for Baltimore. Ray and I are working with a team to put a business fund together to invest, especially in inner cities. So, again, it's not that they're athletes. That's coincidence. It's that they're people that work hard, focus, and generate results. That's what I like.
That's so fun. Now, if we could maybe go to your ticket business, and I don't know if most people, because I think most people, when they hear about you, they immediately go to Priceline, don't they? Is that sort of where most people start?
Yeah, that's obviously the most high profile thing that I was part of. But I started, you know, for me, that was the fifth startup I was involved in. I'd been doing it for quite a bit before that.
And when I found out, Jeff, that when we go to an airport and we put in our driver's license or our, you know, Southwest number or whatever it is, our identification, and it spits out a ticket for us, that's you.
Yeah, we pioneered that back when you just had to stand in a line at an airport. So we were in the lab saying, we're going to fix this one. Right. Like I said before, it's all about solve some problem. And by the way, solve some problem that somebody will pay you to solve. That's what drove me crazy during the internet days. All these, like you said, all these people were giving everything away and losing money and said, we'll figure it out later. And I kept thinking, or you could just do something that people value and will pay you for.
So now in the kiosk business, that one of the things I find fascinating about that is on the surface, it looks like a very hard industry to break into. And one of the things we talk about in our book, Play Bigger, is that category kings kind of create an ecosystem around them, which you absolutely did. But in order to make this work, you've got to get a conglomerate or a consortium, or you tell me how to think of it, of airlines and airports to standardize on this kiosk technology, or it sort of doesn't work, right?
No, that's absolutely right. And that is much harder than we thought going in.
Well, it sounds really fucking hard. And so as an entrepreneur with a big dream saying, hey, you know, standing in these lines seems stupid. What if we had a magical little kiosk here that could just print our tickets? It's a great insight. It's a great aha. But how do you get airlines and you know, government run airports and so
sure.
forth? How did you do that, Jeff? How do you go from insight to like, ba-boom, you're the category king of that space?
You hit the other part, because not only, not only is the interface difficult, but now all of a sudden you're in this world of IT security and no one wants you in the back end of an airport or an airline system.
Not even close, right? Oh, yes, just give us your APIs and we'll integrate with that.
I'd be happy to hook you up to our live inventory, pal. That was very, very tough. So there are two ways. Two vehicles you can drive through that opening. One of them is straight up money. You literally have to be putting a bag of money on the table, which we could do. And the reason was because you have to come in with the spreadsheet saying, here is literally the cost, right? If you work hard enough, you can get this data. And you can, what you can't get, you can estimate close enough. And you go in and say, this is what it is costing you to staff the airport with all these people that all they do is look at someone's driver's license and then hit print and hand them a boarding card. So we laid out the left side of the equation. This is what you're spending today. Then we said, if you bought all these kiosks, this would be the cost tomorrow. So that was literally saying, would you like me to leave this bag of money on your table, or do you want me to just go home and stop bothering you?
So you just built a very compelling argument around the economics. It says, you know, in the book, Play Bigger, we call it from twos, right? It costs you this, and it could be costing you that. Don't be stupid.
Yes, and I love that you call them from twos, because the mistake that a lot of people make is thinking they already know that. Think, how could they not already see that? They don't.
But isn't it obvious?
Right.
No, we got to tell them it's obvious, right?
Yeah.
So how did you explain to the world what, of course, in hindsight, seems completely obvious, but at the time, the airline industry was not welcoming you with open arms, right?
No, not at all. We even got shut down in the middle of the night by some of them because they found out we were accessing the back end system. So that brings me a perfect segue, thank you, to the second thing, you know, vehicle to drive through that opening, which is customers. Well, I'm going to say customer/competitor. So, well, all you need to get, when you get one in every industry, somebody's in fourth place and falling, making up the fourth place, it doesn't matter. Somebody's behind and failing and needs to take a risk. So even though what you want to do is start with the American, Deltas, and Uniteds of your industry, they have no interest in you. You're a little gnat and you're risky and you're bothering them. So meanwhile, there's the TWA who's dying. And somewhere in every industry, there's some last place competitor that says, I might as well tie this because otherwise I'm going to lose anyway. When you get somebody to give you a pilot, then what you can do is now you start to build customer demand. So you tell your customers, I can't get to American Airlines, but if I can get customers that love this thing to every chance they get, to tell American Airlines, you need to put one of these things in or I'm going to start using another airline, right? When customers start demanding, you've got to have one of these. And when competitors do, that changes everything. So what we discovered was that you know, we had a lot of airlines that weren't buying from us because it was smart. They were buying because they said, wait, that airline got it? And we said, yeah, we just signed with them. And they said, well, we can't be the only airline without it. We'll take one. So you just need to knock the first pin over to, you know, to bowl a strike. If you hit the right pin and you know, with the ball right on the head, you'll actually knock all the pins down. So that was the other thing. We got customers talking about it, and then we got a competitor using it, and that's when they paid attention to us.
You know, it's so interesting. I get asked the question a lot, how do we make a category tip, right? How do we go from those early customers to like a big new space? And what you just said is the key, right? And the analogy in my head is the Discovery Channel or the Nat Geo special on penguins. You know, you see all the penguins on the iceberg, and they're all just standing there looking cute. And then all of a sudden, the big Mac Daddy penguin decides it's time to jump in, and all the rest of them go. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so we need to get a couple of the Mac Daddies into the water, and then all the other penguins are going to jump, right?
We better go. Yep, that is a wonderful visual.
And you know, there's a lot of people, Jeff. You know, you look at that kiosk business, and I think, frankly, Priceline is very similar in this regard because you're actually doing more than a startup, more than designing a category. You're mobilizing an industry around a completely new paradigm. And I think a lot of people look at that and go, well, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, IBM does or GE does, or, you know, pick your Fortune 500 company. Startups can't show up and mobilize the entire industry, create a whole new standard and have everybody adopt it. That's not, GE does that. It's not, you know, Jeff and his band of pirates.
And you know, so many people think that, and that's why they don't try. But again, if everybody thought that, there'd be no Uber, right? There'd be no Airbnb, because those were startups that came in and said, we are going to change a paradigm in industry and introduce something new. Uber's a great example of it. So luckily, everybody doesn't think that way, but most people do. And the truth is, here's some other good news. Once you start the process, if you have already solved the solution, acquisitions happen a lot. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize this. Google buys the equivalent of one company a week because they buy, last year, I think it was 52 companies. So, or 53. So that's like buying a company every Friday. So if you solve the problem and you start that snowball rolling downhill, frequently they'll look and say, well, those people have already built it. Let's just buy it. So even if you don't get to finish it because the big guys show up, if you're the one that shows how to solve it, there's a lot of success stories that came out of just getting it done while the big companies were still in meetings discussing it. You've already built the solution. That agility and speed to market counts.
Absolutely. And your comments also bring up an interesting point. How do you I'm just going to say it, one of the most legendary founder entrepreneurs and I would say category designers in the tech business, how do you decide, hey, we're going to sell this company versus absolutely not, we're going public and do what you did, for example, at Priceline?
You know, I think that decision for everybody is a very multidimensional equation. Because in one of the sort of myths of entrepreneurship is people thinking that their startup, whatever business they have, has to last the rest of their life. I get people that are saying, you know, it's been going good for 7 years, but now this competition's coming in, are we going to keep up? Actually, you don't necessarily have to. If you're at that point and somebody makes you an offer and you can sell it, go do something else. Go start another one. Go solve another problem. So the thinking that every company has to be a company that can last forever is just not, for you as the founder, is just not an accurate thing. And I think I think the real answer to your question is at the beginning is understanding. I ask people all the time, why are you doing this? What is your goal? And I had one guy say, I'm just trying to get out of debt and get my house, whatever it is, right? If that's what it is, and you're at a point where somebody offers you enough money to do that, you could say, well, if I kept this company 10 more years, it would be even more. Say, right, but you hit the goal. It's not a bad thing to say, this company served its purpose and its time. I will sell it now because this is what I was trying to get to, and go do another thing. So I guess my answer is it's very individual, but you won't know if you've never asked the question in advance, why am I doing this and what am I trying to get to? So that when I get there, I can look up and say, hey, I got where I was trying to go at this moment in my life. And it's okay to do something different now.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because one of the many unique things I notice about you, Jeff, is I think many of us men can have very limited, if you will, definitions of self. That is to say, you know, somebody who's retired and is doing different things in life. You know, I talk to other guys and they say, I just can't really retire. And you unpack it with them. And what you end up hearing is, my identity is so deeply tied to being a CEO or an entrepreneur or an investment or whatever label category thing they have in their head about themselves. And so part of the reason why they A, can't do something different, or B, retire, or whatever other things might be, is literally they don't know what to fucking say at a cocktail party. And so I guess my question is, right, you're this guy that seems to have this incredibly broad self-definition. I mean, and so how do you think about yourself for yourself, so to speak?
Well, I have to tell you, that all changed. I had the same worries when I, you know, when I got to the point where I said, I think I'm done with the CEO thing. And so whether it was the R word, retire or not, I wondered the same thing, because I do see that with a lot of people that lose themselves because that was their identity, that CEO role or that company, whatever. But I think part of it is, I guess, really understanding what fulfills you, which I didn't know then. I did find out that, you know, making money or winning awards or something wasn't all that was cracked up to be. I'm not saying those things were bad, but, you know, there was a point where I said, so that's it. That's literally the reason everybody's honking at each other in traffic just to get here, because it wasn't as fulfilling as I thought it was going to be. So I
think hold on. I hate to interrupt you, but I got to. We live in a world that, for the most part, programs us that the two greatest things you can be are famous and rich.
Yep.
That's the culture, right? Kim Kardashian.
Absolutely right.
So you are both of those things.
That bothers me every single day that that's what we're raised to be, especially getting there one day and saying that was it.
Why is a guy, and again, I hate to interrupt you, but you got there, you were there, you've been there for a very long time. You can get anybody you want on the phone, including presidents of countries, and you are rich and famous. And so what do you mean that that wasn't all it was cracked? What are you telling us?
Well, I didn't know until I did something different, right? And that's generally what I tell people all the time. Get out and try stuff, right? It's okay to not like something, and it's actually okay to quit. I had some kid tell me he hated his accounting job, but he didn't want to be a quitter. I said, all right, then waste the entire rest of your life sitting there doing something you hate so you can say, at least I'm not – I had a horrible life, but at least I'm not a quitter. That's just stupid. I said, who told you that? Everybody said, you don't quit. I said, you don't waste your life doing things you don't like. It's okay to find out that this thing I just tried, I don't like it, I don't want to do it anymore. And the only way you know that is by trying stuff. So when I got out, broke out of that sort of CEO life and went and did the stuff I do now, mentoring, you know, I'll tell you a moment because it kind of harks back to a little bit where we started. But this was a charity thing, but I was at an inner city YMCA. And I was sitting with the kids, a bunch of the kids in a circle playing this game. And we were in the gym away from the cocktail party with all the dressed up adults. The kids felt very, very removed. They were poor kids and these were rich adults, the sponsors. So I took the kids to the gym. We sat on the floor, we were playing a game. But this was a funny moment to me that made me wonder, you said about, you know, your self-definition, because all of a sudden all the giggling and laughing stopped and all the kids went quiet. And I said, what's wrong? And they said, adults just showed up. And I stopped and looked around and I was like, wait, what am I? And they said, well, we don't consider you an adult. You're one of us. And I was like, okay, this is one of the coolest moments of my life. And I don't know what caused this. So I started thinking about what environments, what activities, what moments make me actually feel like I'm doing something that matters to me. In fact, I literally, Chris, I think I told you about this in Philly. I saw a sign on the wall one day, somebody's office, that said, you may be successful, but will you matter? And that sign, I couldn't get it out of my head. Like, went to bed thinking about that. What's the difference between success and mattering? Success is IPOs and exits and fame, like you said, money and fame. But mattering is there some kid out there that'll come up to you, some person out there that comes up and says, my life is better because you were in it. The first time that happened, and I will never forget it because it was a girl named Wendy, somebody I mentored and helped. And this had nothing to do with money. She didn't ask me for that. This had to do with guidance, advice, and mentoring. And she wrote me a letter, a handwritten letter. And handwritten letter said, this was my life before, this is my life now. hated my life before, loved my life now. And the bridge between those two things was your time and guidance. And the feeling that that gave me is changed everything. I said, this is what I want to be able to do with the rest of my life. This makes me feel like I actually matter. So that was my definition between the difference between successful and matter. I was already successful, but all of a sudden I matter. And that's because I mattered to somebody because I made a difference in their life.
You know, I'm so fascinated by how and why someone like you comes to this. And it may sound obvious to some, but you know, having lived in Silicon Valley for the better part of 20 years, and now I'm not quite in it, but I'm close in Santa Cruz, you know, so close enough, but far enough, so to speak. I had this experience a little while ago, Jeff, and I of course, I'm not going to talk about who it was because it's completely inappropriate. But this guy's an entrepreneur, legendary entrepreneur. You would know who he is. Went public, had a great outcome, ended up selling his company, multi-billion dollar outcome, huge premium on the stock after he sold the company after going public. And I had a conversation with him shortly thereafter, congratulated him on selling the company and kind of riding off in the sunset and so forth. And I don't know this guy that well. And we had a fairly short conversation as I was just wishing him well and saying how inspiring what he had achieved was. And I forget exactly how he said it, Jeff, but it became very clear how unfulfilled and unhappy and even angry he was. Because, and it, he said it, and I won't say how he said it, but he's like, yeah, well, but all these other guys are worth way more than I am. And I'm going to have to do something about that. Yeah. And you could hear it. It was like, and like, so this guy's one of the richest guys in Silicon Valley. And because, you know, Zuckerberg or Ellison or Gates or Bezos or, you know, pick whoever the fuck you want to pick, because those guys are ahead of him, you know, he's upside down. And I just thought, what's happened to us, man?
Yeah, what a warped perspective.
What? And so I guess my point in that diatribe is we see that in Silicon Valley. We see the competition for, well, you bought three lots in Atherton to build your compound. I'm going to buy six. And you see all this bullshit, right? And like, where are you on the Forbes list? And that becomes like the thing. And so, A, did you ever find yourself being sort of sucked into that? Well, let me ask that, and then I'll ask my follow-up.
The answer is very briefly. I did, but, you know, I have to say it was much more, I would say, the influence of people around me, because I was never raised that way, and I wasn't raised around any money or anything. But when I sold the first company, and we sold the company for millions of dollars, and everybody was telling me what to build and what to buy. It's everybody else living vicariously through you saying, you know, telling you to go build your mansion or whatever it is, or buy your fancy cars. There's a lot of everybody else wants to live through you because they do think that's the dream. So you get a lot of pressure from outside as well. That was not a natural feeling to me. I was just never materialistically based. I got so many people telling me, here's all the things you can do and you should do. By the way, because they want to go, you know, swim in your new pool and stay at your new place or ride your new car or whatever. So, yeah, there was a lot of pressure early on that I would hear things like that from a lot of people. And everybody pushes you into it. You almost feel like you're failing the mission if you don't do some of those things. So I think everybody sort of, if you hit that point, you go through a phase where you experience that a little bit. But like I said, you also, at least in my case, find out that, you know, it's not as, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just not as cool as I thought it was. By the way, Chris, I'm going to have to wrap up in just a couple of minutes here.
Yeah, fair enough. So what advice would you have to sort of the newly successful, whether it's an executive who's first starting to make some real money or an entrepreneur or an athlete, or, you know, you're somebody who has had insane levels of success. And not only are you still a human being, like, you're a legendary human being.
You know, I think that the most important thing is by staying grounded, by being surrounded by the right people. Because you know what happens in that life? You people upgrade their friends, not even intentionally, right? Because suddenly people that never spoke to you before will consider you a peer and invite you to things. And now all of a sudden you're hanging out at places that you can't even believe you were invited to. If you literally do say, I'm going to just upgrade all my friends and now I'm going to hang out with these people, and lose the people around you that keep you grounded, they remind, you know, that are, they're the people that help shape you. I see that. I literally had friends. I remember, I won't get into detail, but I literally remember post Priceline IPO. Some people I'd known for my whole life that never had a dime and suddenly had money. And I even can tell you a case of someone that decided he could upgrade his wife to somebody much younger and hotter because now he had money. I was horrified and disgusted and disappointed. But it happens every single day. So if you allow those influences, and they show up when money or fame, success shows up, a lot of those people that live around it show up. You got to stay grounded by being around the people that you like being around. And, you know, bring back, like I said, to what we were talking about at the beginning. One of the things that helps me keep perspective on all things in life is when I am in Vietnam, you know, with a bunch of young people where none of the Silicon Valley kind of stuff, they've never dreamed of a big house or car. That's not the impact they want. So when I spend time with a lot of people whose worldview is so refreshingly pure and different, it really helps me, you know, to keep grounded, to keep focused on what matters. So I think the answer is surround yourself with the right people.
Awesome. And just quickly before I let you go, as a kid who grew up in Montreal loving Star Trek, how cool is Bill Shatner?
He is so, so funny. So we launched multiple businesses. And one of the things we launched out of Priceline was a consumer business called Yard Sale. And I was working with him and we were writing our own ad copy for that. And I found recently some of the outtakes of the commercials that we were working on with Shatner. And he's just, his dry sense of humor is absolutely, he was a pleasure to work with. And his dry sense of humor is absolutely hilarious. I just absolutely love the guy and his perspective. And, you know, he got mellower as he got older, as we all tend to do. But it was an absolute delight to be able to work with him.
Well, and another incredible example of your marketing genius, because those Priceline Negotiator ads with him in it were incredibly, incredibly memorable and obviously hugely successful. So kudos on the creativity with Captain Kirk. All right. Before we wrap, anything else, Jeff?
Not really. I just want to say thank you, first of all. I mean, you and I could sit and talk, which we have. You and I could sit and talk forever. I remember that. Just going to that restaurant in Philly, we had the wait staff giving us their phone numbers because they all, whatever, telling us, whatever the two of us were doing, they want to be part of it. That was just a special moment for me because in the end, that's all that, like we just think, all that really matters is what impact are you having on other people? It's great that you're successful for yourself, and I'm not pretending I didn't appreciate that, but it's even cooler when you start to impact people around you through your own, whatever, involvement, success, commitment, mentoring, whatever. So I just liked that when you and I were together, we kind of, that whole restaurant was kind of in our table and lit up on it. And I can't wait to do that with you again, my friend.
Me too. And I want you to know, put me in, coach. Your mission is my mission. Everything you do, I love and support. If there's ever any time, any way I can help in any of your missions to support and build entrepreneurship around the world, you inspire the shit out of me. Being around you is a ton of fun, whether it's in a restaurant or on stage or anywhere else. And so I'm at your disposal if and when you want me around. And Jeff, I can't thank you enough. You're such a huge inspiration. You're a legendary multi-time entrepreneur, incredible marketer. You've designed and dominated categories, and now you're giving it all back. Wow.
Thank you so much, and we will definitely be working on things together.
Bless you, and be legendary, as I know you will be, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.
That was there fun. He is. If you like Jeff Hoffman, why don't you share this episode right now? Don't you think that'd be a great idea, Matthew?
I think it'd be a good idea. You should go to iTunes immediately. Go to the right-hand side, click the drop-down box, and click copy link, and share it with your friends on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, you know, carrier pigeon. I mean, just draw, you know, just wrap the link into a piece of paper that you wrap around the pigeon's leg and send it off.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, you know. You've been teaching me a lot lately because you're a single, handsome, younger guy, right? And you're on Flinder and Binder and Twinder and all those things, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So I wonder if we should ask our friends to start sharing Legends and Losers on Flinder and Binder and Twinder and stuff as they're dating each other.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, just randomly insert it into the text with, you know, people that you might be interested in of the fairer sex. Absolutely.
Well, see, here's what I think. I think asking people whether they're fans of the show is an important way to decide whether or not you should go on a Flinder date.
That's right.
Right? Because if they're not listening to the show, go fuck them.
Yeah, exactly. Clearly, they do not have the intestinal fortitude to handle a relationship with you anyway. So it just, it's what we call a filter, right?
Like if you don't love the Big Lebowski, we're not dating.
That's right.
Right? So it's kind of, I think people should incorporate it with, what's the one you use?
Bumble.
Right.
Okay.
Is that, that's the new one,
that's
right?
Recently.
Well.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
And people like it because?
The girls get to choose who they respond to. That's the only way to start conversations.
So the female of the species,
right,
has to initiate. She can't get like creeped on unless she initiates the creeping.
Exactly. Yes, the female must initiate the creeping. That is the idea.
Let the creeping begin. All right. We would like to thank.
Oh, there's so many. HarperCollins, instant classic, Play Bigger, How Pirates, Dreamers, and Innovators Create and Dominate Markets.
PursuingResults.com. Matthew's Company, the producers of legendary podcasts, and this one too.
Equity Directory, which connects startups to talent and resources they need to build a legendary business.
NetSuite, number one in cloud ERP.
One Life Fully Lived, where you can dream it, plan it, and live it.
The it being your best life, of course.
That's right.
Atira Systems, fighting to stop firefighters and save firefighters with strong water technology at AtiraSystems.com.
That's right. Project Relo, a nonprofit offering extraordinary leadership experience with Americans' military veterans.
We'd also like to remind you to pick up a copy of Jeff Hoffman's legendary book, one of Matt Johnson's top five recommendations, Scale, seven proven principles to grow your business and get your life back.
And the incomparable Interview Valet, Tom Schwab's team is fantastic. They are podcast interview marketing, so you can get on podcasts and get some business.
Stop Riding the Pine, the awesome podcast from our friend Jamie J.
That's right. We got Fathom Digital Marketing that drives revenue at fathomdelivers.com.
The awesome book, Never Split the Difference, the smash hit from our friend Chris Voss.
That's right. And WWF, because our planet and wildlife matter.
We'd like to remind you that this oddcast is the sole property of the Legends and Losers Oddcast Network. And what would we love it if they did, Matthew?
Share the shit out of it.
We must remind you that all rights do remain disturbed. This oddcast is clearly produced in a studio that does contain nuts. Legends and Losers may also contain forward-looking statements,
backward-looking statements,
present moment-looking statements, and completely insane statements. We'd like to remind you to watch The Big Lebowski.
Thank your nearest firefighter.
Keep your hands up and your chin down.
Never build a website on Wix. Ever.
Wix sucks. Fuck Wix.
That's right. Be nice to your sister for some reason. I have two of them, so hey, guys.
Be nice. And if you haven't changed your mind lately, how do you know you have one?
That's right. Never reach a conclusion, as we know from Bix Bixen, because the conclusion is when you stop thinking.
Thank you, Dandy Candy. We love you.
That's right. And doesn't this oddcast really tie the room together?
Yeah, it really does. It really ties the entire studio together. Right.
Now, finally, we have some apologies.
Yeah, our deepest apology today goes to Avishay Abarami, CEO of Wix. Sorry, Avishay, we just ran out of time for you. That's it. Thank you, my friends. We'll see you again soon on another episode of
Legends and Losers.